Hi there, it's Mario Rosenstock. You know your man off Giff Grubb on the Ian Dempsey Breakfast Show, but I'm also your man who presents that great podcast called, yeah, you guessed it, the Mario Rosenstock Podcast. You never know what or who you're going to get, but you always get me, a brand new and exclusive comedy sketch, and a conversation with a twist. Catch the Mario Rosenstock Podcast every week on the Go Loud app and all of the usual places.
With On Ice, Ireland's premium ice skating experience, where winter memories are made. Visit onice.ie.
Go Loud. Sounds better with us.
The Last Word.
With Life Pharmacy. Over 100 local pharmacies nationwide that are always here to help. Life Pharmacy. Live better together.
One of our great novelists is back with us. John Banville has written Venetian Vespers, and he's with us here in the studio. John, thank you very much for being with us.
So, happy to be here.
What is this now? Is this one of your more literary fiction pieces of work, or is this one of your thrillers like you used to be with Benjamin Black? Or have you found at this stage of career a hybrid place?
I think this is a hybrid. I think the engine goes off when it stops at the traffic lights. I'm not quite sure what it is. I always wanted to write a gothic novel, a ghost story. Always wanted to write an erotic novel. And this is a bit of both.
Why did you always want to write those?
Well, they're challenging. Very hard to write erotic fiction. Very hard to write about sex, because, you know.
There's awards for bad sex writing, aren't there?
Well, yeah. I was shortlisted once for bad sex writing. I didn't win it. Another one of the many prizes I didn't win.
Would you have taken a certain pride if you'd won for that?
I suppose I would.
Why?
Actually, the sex in the book that they shortlisted me for, it wasn't bad at all. I don't know what they were on about.
What is it makes it so difficult to write about sex without being maybe prurient or just straightforward pornographic?
Well, sex is so, first of all, it's ridiculous, you know. The position is ridiculous.
Which one?
Well, yes. Which of the many. But also it you know, it gets heated so quickly that I get heated and the reader gets heated, and it's, you know, because that's not what writing is supposed to be about. It's supposed to be standing back from oneself. You have to write coldly. People think that writers write passionately, but we don't. We write absolutely cold-bloodedly.
Explain that a bit more to me.
Well, if I were to care about what I was writing about, if I were to be emotional about what I was writing about, what you get would be emotional slop. T.S. Eliot said that to be an artist is to negate the personality, and I think that's true. I'm not there. I'm not in the books. I always, at the end of literary events, I see people coming towards me to get their book signed, and I can see them looking at me thinking, he's really a lot shorter than I thought, and he's older than I thought, and he's not really good-looking. And I want to say to them, look, you probably fell in love with the book because you want me to sign it, but the person who wrote it is not me. That person's not here. The John Banville who wrote that book ceased to exist when I stand up from the desk.
And the characters aren't you either.
Well, the characters are all me. Of course they're me.
Oh, they're you?
Yeah.
Personality traits? Well, are they not imagined people rather than been an extension of yourself?
Yes, but they're imagined versions of myself. Just as the way in which, you know, in our dreams, we think we're dreaming about other people. In fact, we're always dreaming about ourselves in masks.
And how does that feed into the book here then, into Venetian Vespers?
Well, I remember sending, when it was in manuscript form, I sent it to Neil Jordan, and he wrote back and he said, you know, liked it. So I said, the trouble is, Neil, people will think it's a self-portrait. And Evelyn Dahlman is such a horrible
bit of a bollocks
creature. He does get done over in the end. We won't say how, but he things are not as he imagined they are. But he's a pathetic. He's called Evelyn Dahlman. Imagine being called Evelyn Dahlman.
Why do you still write?
Well, that's what I do.
Some people retire.
What would I do if I retired?
Drink, have fun.
Have fun? That's not what life is for.
Isn't
drink, yes, but having fun. No, no. No, I wouldn't know what to do with my time. I really wouldn't. The day is very long. Now that I'm old, I sleep very little, so the day is longer.
Do you write for as many hours as you used to?
No. I used to be able to write for 8, maybe 10 hours a day. I can't do more than 3 now.
Why is that? Is it physically taxing, mentally taxing?
I'm old. My faculties are failing.
Your brain isn't fading. Surely not. I mean, not if you're able to write books like this.
Yes, but I put it this way. My powers of concentration are not what they were. To write, you have to be absolutely concentrated for hour after hour after hour. I always tell a little anecdote of one day, years and years ago, I was writing, and my wife put her head in at my workroom door and said, "I'm going to the shops." She closed the door, and then she opened the door and said something else, and I said, "I thought you were going to the shops." And she said, I have been at the shops. And I had no sense of that interval of time having passed. I looked at the page. There wasn't much on the page to account for the time. The time gets very strange when you're... I mean, we all know this, when you concentrate very deeply on something.
And suddenly hours can be gone.
Time moves at a very different pace. I mean, you know, the moment when you fall in love with somebody, time slows down. You know, suddenly everybody's walking in slow motion. Then you go out for a drink and you drop glass on the floor and you cut your foot on it. And it slows and slows and slows. But then, you know, something else happens, a car crash. And that happens in an instant. So time is not as we think it is.
Time may be a bit elastic, but when you're not writing, how is time for you? Do you find as you're getting older? You're 80 now, are you?
Yeah, I am old. Officially, I'm old. Well, I'm only 79.
Excuse me. As you approach 80, how do you feel about that? I mean, do you feel that your life is galloping away towards an end, or do you feel it's all slowing down into the end?
In certain aspects, it slows because, as I say, I can't concentrate at the level I used to concentrate. I have too much time on my hands. I have to put the bottle of whiskey away, you know, beyond my reach before 7 o'clock in the evening. I can see why people, as they get older, drink and make fools of themselves generally. I should say ourselves, make fools of ourselves generally. And there is a certain comedy to it as well. The dissolution of the self is a comic process. I don't mean the thing of going upstairs and forgetting where you came upstairs or where you lost your keys, but the actual, the physical and mental dissolution is comic. In a way that I can't understand. You'll find out.
Hi there, it's Mario Rosenstock. You know your man off Gift Grub on the Ian Dempsey Breakfast Show. Have you checked out my podcast yet? Podcast? Is it any good? Well, I think so, Roy. Every episode kicks off with a brand new and exclusive comedy sketch. Huh? Followed by a great chat with a great guest. I like to call them interviews with a twist. The chats can go anywhere and often do. Check out and follow the Mario Rosenstock podcast on Go Loud and get stuck in.
With On Ice. Ireland's premium ice skating experience, where winter memories are made. Visit onice.ie.
Go Loud. Sounds better with us.
Well, I was just thinking that, okay, I can understand you're not able to spend as much time writing, which is central to your being. That has been your life. And that's why you have so many great books to show the achievement of all of these hours spent working. And I can understand why your concentration levels might be dropping a little bit. But is there not other ways to compensate for that time that you can't concentrate on work? And it may not be, reading books might be a concentration in themselves, but I'm sure you still do a lot of that. But you love movies and you go watch movies and watch television and do other things to fill your time perhaps a greater expanse.
You're asking me if I've become a normal human being. No, I don't know what other people do.
Might you not try it?
Well, I wouldn't know how. I mean, I haven't got the skills for it.
It's been an adaptation, maybe. An adaptation of your life in the sense that you would adapt to change circumstances and do something a little bit different.
There's only one big adaptation coming.
You're writing your autobiography as well, are you?
Oh, well, it's a pack of lies.
Isn't everybody's autobiography? Doesn't everybody's autobiography best light possible?
This really is a pack of lies. Apart from anything else, I'm the last man surviving. There has been a quantum event that has killed everybody else in the world.
But that's very useful because you can't libel the dead, so you can say anything about them.
And then I discovered that there's a last woman. So we make a suicide pact. So that the whole damn hideous carnival won't start up again.
Does she know this?
Oh, yes. Yeah, she's with me in this.
Go on, how much of this autobiography have you written? Because it's a very different thing, isn't it, to write an autobiography, to write the fiction that
you spent your life writing? It's not an autobiography, it's a novel. It's called an autobiography. It has a wonderful title, which was given to me by a friend. It's called Out of True, an Autobiography, Part One. And, of course, there'll be no part two. You see, when I finished a book called Singularities, my last real novel, it ends at the words full stop. And I thought it was going to be my last book. I didn't think I would live this long. Now I'm stuck with, I seem to be compos mentis. I seem to be, bits of me don't seem to be falling off in the street. So I have to find something to do it myself. So this will be my last book. But God forbid that I should finish it and have more time on my hands. What'll I do then?
Could it be published unfinished after your passing?
It probably will be. I mean, it takes me 4 or 5 years to write a book like this. So...
Do you write by longhand?
Yeah.
Why? You can type, can't you? I mean, you used to work as a sub-editor.
Oh, yes. I transfer it onto the word processor, the computer then. It's to do with pace, a nib. The resistance of the paper to a nib gives me exactly the right speed to work at. The crime books I write directly onto the screen because writing with a nib is too slow because you don't get... What you need is spontaneity for those books. But the other ones, I have to write at a very, very slow pace, like a snail.
How is Venetian Vespers written?
I wrote that by hand. I don't really understand what this book... I'm quite interested in the book. I might even read it sometime.
You're sort of detached from it, sort of in an otherworldly way, is it?
Oh, that happens with all books. I mean, I years ago, somebody showed me a Leaving Cert paper with an examination paper with a piece of prose on it that the students were to comment on. My friend said, "Do you recognize that?" I said, "I sort of do. I must have read it." He said, "You wrote it." I'd forgotten. You see, when you finish a book, that's the past. The thing that matters is the next one. The next one, which is going to be a masterpiece. And we live...
But you have written masterpieces, haven't you?
That's for you to say.
Ah, come on. There must be stuff that you've written from the past that you're very proud of.
No, no.
No?
Every work of art is a failure, necessarily. Because we aim for perfection. We can't have perfection.
So it's every book that you've written something that if you were to write it again, you would go back and change it?
Yes.
You find it difficult to let go of a book, to hand it over for publication?
Oh, no, I'm glad to get rid of it. It's like, scraping chewing gum off the sole of your shoe,
I suppose I meant from that in the case that, you always think you can improve it, you can go back, but sometimes you just have to hand it over and let it be published.
Yes, except, you know, when I was a teenager, I tried to paint. I had no talent whatsoever for it. But it did teach me a very important thing, that when you're painting, if you add one extra drop of paint to a picture, it can turn to mud just instantly. Writing a book, painting a painting, posing a piece of music, making any work of art, an awful lot has to do with timing and knowing when to stop. But the problem is, as the great French poet Paul Valéry said, a work of art is never finished, only abandoned. But the trick is to know when to abandon it.
So if I was to ask you, what's the best book from your catalogue for somebody who hasn't read John Banville to go and read, that they'd get the most enjoyment or satisfaction from? Could you name a book for me?
I'm not in the business of providing enjoyment or satisfaction for readers. I suppose the one that got nearest to what I set out to do was The Infinities.
Why is that?
I don't know. You know, it's like clicking your fingernail against a wine glass. You get that ping. And in certain parts of The Infinities, I could feel that little chime. But, you know, it's full of faults, it's full of flaws, it's full of that Tuesday afternoon when I got tired and bored and just said, oh, I'll leave that sentence as it is. That could be fixed. But if you go back and try to fix them, they become dead. Henry James famously revised all his books for the famous New York edition, and he killed a lot of them, just killed them. Because you have to accept that, you know, I wrote books when I was in my 20s, my 30s, and my 40s. They were of their time. I mean, I was as I was when I wrote them. It would be foolish to go back and replaster them with what I know now.
Venetian Vespers is the new novel by John Banville. It's been great meeting you again. Thank you so much for taking the time to join us here on The Last Word.
Thank you, Matt.
The Last Word.
With Life Pharmacy. Over 100 local pharmacies nationwide that are always here to help. Life Pharmacy. Live better together.
Hi there, it's Mario Rosenstock. You know your man off Giff Grub on the Ian Dempsey Breakfast Show, but I'm also your man who presents that great podcast called, yeah, you guessed it, the Mario Rosenstock Podcast. You never know what or who you're going to get, but you always get me, a brand new and exclusive comedy sketch, and a conversation with a twist. Catch the Mario Rosenstock Podcast every week on the Go Loud app and all of the usual places.
With On Ice, Ireland's premium ice skating experience, where winter memories are made. Visit onice.ie.
Go Loud. Sounds better with us.